Isn't it nice to have such talent in our congregation and to know that they give of themselves so freely, so many of us, especially Peter? I'd like to acknowledge that. So when you got up this morning, you decided to come to the center. I'm going to say church. Paul's not here. And every one of us has a reason for why we come. Some of us come for the talks. Some people love the music. Some people just like the special events of the community. And I find I'm kind of in a subcategory of that. I'm not one of the people who just come here to criticize, and some people actually do that. And I love the raising of consciousness, but I consider myself in a subcategory called the A&A group, the Awe and Amazement group. And because, you know, I've studied this for years and years. I've been the pastor of a church. And there's this little part that we don't like to acknowledge that sometimes, like, I really know this, you know. What new can be said to me, really? And just about that time, I come to these services, and someone, usually Paul but not always, will say something, and bam, I have to move over from the I just thought I knew it all and God laughed section over to the awe and amazement. And that's why I come here. It's because I get a chance to change my mind and to see things differently, especially when I don't want to. And that's not always fun, but it's ever amazing. And this is also the same reason I trawl the internet. You know, there's so many interesting things out there, and some of them are actually true. I get far different results going there than here, but it was a real surprise to find this article. And I tell you, I could not have made this up. So I'm going to refer to it because it is definitely an A&A moment. Awe and amazement. So I'm going to read a little bit of this to you because I don't want you to lose the flavor. Swimmer drives with shark on leg. Wednesday, February the 11th, 2004. Lifeguards at a beach post north of Sydney couldn't believe their eyes when a man walked in with a small shark attached to his leg. Luke Trasoglovic swam 300 meters or about 1,000 feet to shore, walked to his car, and drove to the local surf club with the 60-centimeter or about 23-inch shark biting his leg and refusing to let go. "I just realized I had to swim like that, hanging on to it," he said. He was snorkeling on a reef when a woebegone or carpet shark attacked his leg. And he got on shore and he asked some people, "Can you help me?" And they couldn't get it off. So he grabs the shark by one end, gets in his car or truck, and drives to the surf club, gets out, those couple of lifeguards are standing, and to their amazement, he's, you know, with a shark on his leg, and it's live. And he came up and said, "Can you guys help me with this?" And the lifeguard said, "You know, I don't think there's anything in the manual about this one." And what they did was to flush the shark's gills with fresh water, and it did let loose. Blood was oozing out. He had about 70 punctures from those needle-like teeth. And for all his efforts, the shark died. But the lifeguard said, "It is amazing that he did not get into trouble in the water with that thing thrashing around." But Trasoglovic remained in good spirits, found humor in it, went to a local hospital, and was treated and released. And this was an interesting fact at the end of the article. Woebegone sharks can grow up to 3 meters or just right at 10 feet in length, possess razor-sharp teeth, and are said to be moody and short-tempered. It may seem much of your family. But, really? Well, I don't know about you, but I got to say, truly, I'm just channeling my Southern Baptist father here. Damn! You know, let's get this into perspective, really. Now, sharks have multiple rows of teeth, and they're always coming more. So if you get by them, you know, even if you pull their teeth out, more would just rise up to get you. They constantly lose them and make them over again. They can also detect blood and urine in the water in the amount of parts per million from a mile away. And when they detect blood, for example, it incites their predator instinct, and they have even been known to go into feeding frenzies and bite each other and eat each other. Now, that Luke, what a guy. With a shark on his leg, he swam about a fifth of a mile. And, you know, this thing's not just lying there like, oh, tow me, honey. So he's got this shark thrashing around, and he swam in. And let's get this straight. What is about a fifth of a mile? Take a football field and the track around it, straighten the track out, and shorten it just a little bit from a fourth of a mile to a fifth of a mile. And that's how far he swam in. And that's no small feat. And the shark is dragging on him the entire way. But, you know, that is just one A&A story, isn't it? Would you agree? You know, so let's get this straight, because we know sharks are the most feared animals in the world. They are the most feared. It's not really warranted. The most dangerous animal to humans are bees. More people die from bee stings every year than any other creature, but nobody's going, oh, my God, there's a bee in the room, you know. But sharks, which is very low percentage of getting attacked, people fear. And, you know, Peter Benchley knew this, and he wrote the book upon which that 70s blockbuster film Jaws was made. And people went to see it in droves. I must admit that even before I sat down, I looked up and screamed when I was at LSU watching Jaws. And people reported irrational fears. They wouldn't go in the water, and even irrational fears of sitting on the toilet. I was not one of those, but it's true that it did happen. And it's very personal for me because I was a science educator for years. And in graduate school, a lot of my study was oceanography. And they took us 7 miles off Big Pine Key down in Florida and said, here's a list of things to do. Jump in. You know, they just didn't have any safety nets. And every time before I got in there, I had to steel myself because there was this fear. I was really... I'm fascinated and afraid of sharks, but that fascination of the oohing and aahing during Shark Week on Discovery Channel. Those of you who know that week, you know what I mean. And, you know, I was just so into this, though. But prior to leaving, I was so convinced I'd be eaten. I called my parents in Louisiana, and mind you, I was a grown woman, close to 30 years old, and said, I love you. I'm going to die while I'm in Florida. I'm going to be eaten, but don't worry, I can't wait to get there. Truly, I did that. Now, you know, given all this, I want you to remember that everything I'm going to tell you today is true. It is true. I couldn't make this up. You know, I was invited to Maui, back where I had been the minister of the church, for the ordination of the present minister. And that's a big deal to get ordained. I don't know if you know that. We don't just get ordained because we become a minister. And I thought, Maui, that's halfway around the world. And all of a sudden I thought, I'm a religious scientist. Let's do it. And I went to Maui for a long weekend, just like that. And I had this wonderful time, saw all my friends, my congregants from back at that period of time. And so it was just a wonderful time. And so I was leaving to go home on Monday, and I can tell you, I remember it just a little bit. It was the 9th of September, 2002, and it was a Friday. Excuse me, it was a Monday. Absolutely, I remember that date so clearly. And so I was going to have a last, and you know when something's real big, you capitalize it. This was a BA, big adventure. And my friends Pam and Larry, who are very dear to me, Pam was the administrator of the church, asked me if I'd like to go out in their boat to Malakini. And Malakini is a big deal in Hawaii. Malakini is a submerged crater. And I don't know if you can see this. There are going to be some pictures on the welcome table. That's Malakini. And you can see it's high up here, and then it comes down, and it just goes down under the water. And it's about 2 miles offshore. And it's a huge, big deal to go out there. This is the Hawaiian trip and the pictures that you see that lure you over there. And I can guarantee you, it is truly beautiful. And it's everything you want to be. And so I said yes, because I'd never been out there. And we went out in the boat, and I was all excited. And Pam and Larry knew how I felt, and so before we anchored in the water, you know, I had to take a moment. And then I jumped in, and it was stunning. The water is clear. You can see way down all around you. And Larry was there with me. And Larry's a great big bear of a man, and he's a very physically gifted man. He's very strong. And we were swimming, and he said to me, would you like to go see the reef? And I said, yeah, I'd like to go see the reef. And so this is a big deal because I'm having this big adventure and my plane is leaving at 5 o'clock. And so, you know, we take off and go over there. And you do the fireman's grip a lot of times. It keeps you steady with your partner. And we're swimming over there and it just felt magical, like I was just floating along. And we got over there and we saw the reef as it comes down into the water and we're pointing and Larry motioned, let's go back. And all of a sudden he reaches, grabs me and tosses me in the air and yells, and he, that's quite a feat. In the water, that is something, or on land. And he tossed me into the air and said, kick hard. And suddenly as I hit the water, I just realized why he said it and why it had seemed so magical on the way over there. Duh, I studied oceanography. What was I thinking? I was in a very strong current now against me. And I motioned and waited for Larry to come back. And Larry just waved as he went over the reef and out into the open water. And I'm going, no, no, you got to come back. Larry, he couldn't hear me. He couldn't hear me. You know, if you've been in the water when you're down there, you really can't hear a lot. And so I realized he wasn't coming over. He just waved like, have fun. And I turned, and all of a sudden, I realized how really strong this current was. And I began swimming, because one thing about it, on this end of Mauna Kea, right here, that's a submerged crater. It drops off immediately 200 feet. This end of Mauna Kea drops off 400 feet, and it creates a huge current that will sweep you out to sea. And I suddenly realized that was the current I'd always heard about, that people were taken out to sea and lost. Never found many times. And I began to swim. And there was this part of me that I knew if I went over the reef, right at the bottom of that down there, there's a whole bunch of sharks. And that's not a joke. They're there. But, you know, there's a lot of fish. And everybody says, oh, they're well fed. It was not reassuring. But no joke. And so I began to swim. And I was swimming. And the current was pushing me. And it will take you out along here. And I looked at the boat and I said, there is no way I'm going over. There is no way I'm going over, because I knew that if I went over at that point, I might panic in the open water. That's my nightmare, being out there with sharks. And, you know, I began to swim. And I began to swim really hard. And my throat is pounding. It's very aerobic to swim in that water. And the water is hitting you in the face. If you've been there, you can't see, you can't hear. And you're going. And I thought, I picked out the boat and I said, I'm going to make it there. And I've got on this big life jacket. It actually is a lot of drag, but you don't take them off. And I kept swimming, and I couldn't catch my breath. And I turned and swam on my back, and I thought, oh, my God, I can't see around me. You know, I'm in the water, and it's pulling me. And I thought, I can't think about that right now. Just swim. And something within me made this laser-like focus to swim, just keep on swimming no matter what. Swim on forward, the breaststrokes, swim on your back, do whatever it takes. And all of a sudden, I heard this noise, and I looked up, and there was the boat. Pam and her brother had come to see us and get us. She realized what was happening. I didn't know they had even seen us. I was so focused, I didn't even think about that. They're both divers. I thought they were diving by that time. And they put the ladder over, and I climbed on it. And as I got in the boat, I got to tell you, my knees went weak. And we went out and got Larry. Larry says it's 5 feet or 5/100ths ocean. He loves it. So he was just fine. And we went back in to a much more shallow place up next to Mauna Kea. And I'm proud to say I rode back out on the horse I rode in on because I got in and did it again, but not being swept out to sea. You know, it's really interesting. So we had this wonderful time, and then they took me back to the dock and dropped me so I could get ready to go to the boat, excuse me, to the airport. And I met a friend as I was leaving, and I was telling her about this big adventure, and she got pale. And she's not a person who gets upset. She's very, very calm. And she said, Susan, do you have any idea how dangerous what you did is? You are never supposed to go over there. And I thought to myself, make a note. Next time you see all the tourists snorkeling and diving boats at the other end, ask why. Really. You know, so on the plane home, I was riding back. I kind of had little flashbacks. I knew I was in the plane, but somehow I was back in the water. And so when I came back, I looked it up. Research tells us that 40% of what we fear never occurs, 30% is over and done with, 12% is about health that we take no action on, 10% is petty and miscellaneous, and 8% is legitimate. Now, here's the point. In the middle of my worst nightmare, I could have done a lot of things. I could have taken that life jacket off, which was usually, you'll drown in those waters if you do that. I could have thrashed, but something within me, I call it the God within me, just said, this is it, focus. This is it, focus. And I will tell you, it's like taking laser beams and lining them up so closely that they will cut diamonds. That's all I thought about. You know, failure was not an option for me. It was not an option because I knew if I went over, I was in trouble, and I was not getting into trouble. And you might say, well, of course you swam. What else would you do? Well, people panic. They do all kinds of things, and many of them die, actually, in that situation. You know, and we can always say what we're going to do in a situation, but not one of us knows until we're in it. It's easy to look at something somebody else is going through, isn't it? Say, I'd do this, I'd do that. Why doesn't he or she do it this way? That's the best thing. And especially if that issue that this person is having is not one of our issues. You know, it's easy to disregard those situations of others until we're in one. You know, it's easy to project how we feel. You know, no matter what it is, something will get us. It's money, perhaps. There's something about it, or a relationship, or a health issue. You know, whatever it is, we all have those things that talk to us. You know, but it's interesting that it's not the actual event that gets us. It's the anticipation of the event. It's that dread and that buildup of tension, you know, and the sleeplessness, the knots in our stomach. And sometimes it literally freezes us in the middle of motion. And what we don't realize is that we're constantly projecting movies in our head of things, negative and positive, but which one do you think we focus on the most? The negative, over and over and over. Now, Hinduism has a very interesting way of explaining this. They say that you should be the interested observer, which means you're in a situation, but you're kind of up here looking at it. And a classic example is the dentist chair. And you have to say, you know, there's a person down there who's tense. They're having a dental visit. You know, it kind of helps you put it into perspective while you're still experiencing it. The kicker is you got to do it in positive situations if they call and tell you you just inherited 2,000 million, gazillion, trillion dollars. Because it's not our experiences that define us. Those are things that happen to us and through us. It's who we are. You know, it's interesting. People can reinforce us with negative images. They can tell us how scary the world is. All you have to do is turn on the TV, pick up a newspaper, get on the internet, and people will reinforce that for you. And often we do the same thing to our successes, sabotage them. And sometimes we can even choose to believe that God, the divine intelligence, spirit, whatever you call it, is not constantly answering our prayer. Now, the Buddha taught, we're told, life is suffering. But what the Buddha really said is the unenlightened life is suffering. And the unenlightened life comes when we are attached to things, how they must be. And those attachments cause us pain. Now, we have attachments, don't we? Some of us have attachments to being negative. And if somebody tries to talk us out of it and mention there's another way to look at it, have you ever strongly justified your fears and how bad things are? That's prayer. That's actually prayer. We don't have to do that. You know, we can think about things as it's taught in Judaism. Lo, that which I have feared has come upon me. But, you know, we could also focus on our happiness. We could do all kinds of things. And lo, that which I never thought could happen, happened. And then we got to deal with it. And again, my father might say, damn, I never thought of it. It would be like this if, you know, kind of biblically sounding. But, you know, how we have to deal with when we get what we pray for. You know, so it comes from our attachments. Suffering is attachments. But what would you do if your biggest fear was in your face? If all of a sudden what your nightmare was there, would you also remember, lo, I am with you even until the ends of the earth? Now, let me share reasons that this situation could have turned out very differently. Number one, while Larry's an excellent swimmer, and he would literally die before he would let something happen to me, I know that. And I don't mean it in any kind of flattering way. That's who he is. He also suffers from PTSD. And that day, I did not realize he was feeling a little bit disconnected. Pam was yelling at us in the water, and we couldn't hear. Don't go there. Don't go. Susan, come back. I couldn't hear her, you know. And I let myself, I'm no victim, I let myself be taken into a dangerous situation. Second thing, Molly Keene's a wildlife refuge. You just can't toss an anchor over the side. You have to go down and tie it to a little hook that's bedded in rock. And come, that's 25 feet deep. Come up, and you must situate everything on the boat because it's dangerous to move without everything situated. And in the length of time it took to do that, I could have been pretty far out to sea. The next thing is the unseen current was a force that was greater than most experienced swimmers can overcome. You know, I even chose, by the way, the wrong boat and was going much further out than I needed to swim to the boat. But Pam did affirm for me that I was making it, which was a nice thing to have. And another thing, I had had foot surgery a while back, and I hadn't been able to exercise, and I wasn't very fit. And swimming is the most aerobic exercise there is. And the next thing is, I had a shoulder injury. I had a major shoulder injury, and a couple weeks before I went, I couldn't even lift my arm higher than this to open the door. It was so painful. Now, sharks are active in the Hawaiian waters. Every year, people get eaten, get attacked, and they have problems in the currents. But, you know, they're attracted to arrhythmic vibrations. That's a fish in trouble. And so there could have been all kind of things that made this situation be different, you know. But it wasn't. It wasn't. My ability to take care of myself overcame every natural fear that I had. My drive to survive guided me every step of the way. And I got to tell you, a metaphysician on Maui, and there are many, many, it's like Southern California times 10, said to me, "Did you have an out-of-body experience in the water?" And I said, "Hell no, I've never been more in my body in my life." And, you know, I was raised Southern Baptist, so saying hell is not good. So, you know, did I feel fear? Yes, momentarily I did. I was really, really not wanting to go over that open ocean. But, you know, fear has messages. If we get them, that's what they have to offer us. We don't have to live there. And the God within me took over and did what needed to be done. It was technically, I shouldn't have been able to do that. You know, I had spent many years in the water over time in New York and different places, oohing and aahing over sharks. I never, ever saw one. Doesn't mean they weren't there. I never, ever saw one. But I had given my power so many times to other things that I thought were really important. And, you know, not one of those things saved me that moment. Not one. It's interesting. You know, not the way I looked, not the things I did, not the job I had or the awards I won. You know, I was too busy fearing dark water all the time. But I focused on something greater, and it worked. And ironic, isn't it? You know, I've been saying for years, oh, I want to have this great spiritual experience. And I'd always looking for deep, capital D, metaphysical meaning in something. And, you know, I never could make it happen. And then there, all of a sudden, I'm thinking I'm going for a fun time for ordination. And there it is, my great deep metaphysical meaning experience. And God has such a sense of humor. It didn't feel very funny at the time, though. You know, what if the story turned out differently? Well, it could have, you know. A lot of things could have been different. And you say, you might have died. You might have been terribly injured. And, you know, I can tell you, having been in a situation where I was really sick, seriously sick, that I would rather die in the middle of a big adventure. If you get eaten by a shark, it's over really quickly, and you may be in shock if it's not. You won't feel anything. I would rather die in the middle of a big adventure than die daily a little bit from a life half lived, where we give up pieces of ourselves day after day after day. I've been through a cancer experience, and death does not have a sting for me. Dying doesn't get my attention, but living poorly does. And I tell you, it gets my thoughts, my whole self focused on what I want to create, and I have done that. You know, but sometimes death does occur, and this is an interesting story. John Gray, who wrote Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus, wrote about his father, and his father had a terrible fear of dying in a car trunk. But for some reason, later on in his life, he began giving rides to hitchhikers, and eventually one did rob him and put him in the back of the car. And he burst out the taillight and was waving his hand, trying to get attention. He was trying to manipulate the trunk from inside, and he died of heat asphyxiation. And the sad thing is, if he would have just taken his hand and turned it to the right where the trunk lock was, it was unlocked, and he could have let himself out. The way out was the way in. Do you get it? The way out is the way in. So, what sharks are we walking around with? Are you dragging a shark around all the time and you don't think it's a big deal? Maybe you got sharks stuck all over you, little sharks or big sharks, and we're just walking around, you know, thinking they're remoras. They're not the sharks. And so we look at this. We look at this and we say, man, that's something else. And so we don't have to put up with that. We don't have to say little bitty things aren't sharks in our life, because we can let them be, because, you know, whatever we focus on grows. So, you know, again, lo, I am with you till the end of the earth, and knock and the door shall be open. Think about it, focus on it, have feelings about it, and you're praying very mightily, and it creates. But that Luke was some guy, you know, swimming a fifth of a mile with a thrashing shark on him. He could have done a lot of things, but he didn't doubt. He just kept on going. He did something incredible in those waters, and he didn't die. And, you know, we don't have to die daily. We can live fully every day. It's a decision that we can make. We can be fully present in the middle of any situation. And if you don't believe that, release your attachment to powerlessness. Release attachment to powerlessness and victimhood. And as Pam, the ever unflappable, said to me that day, oh, Susan, you can't think of and worry about sharks. You know, she's so practical. You could never outrun a shark. And I said, Pam, that doesn't help. And she looked at me. She looked at me and she took my face in her hands and she said to me with love, and I'm not a sweet person, but with a lot of love, she said, Susan, you were fine. You have always been fine, and you will always be fine. You will always be fine. You know, and that's true. So prayer works and belief creates. So we need to choose carefully and leave the driving and swimming of the details to God. Because there's nothing outside of ourselves, nothing, no matter how big it appears to be, that's going to save us. What's going to save us is in here. Separation from God, it is an illusion, because all there is God. Now, the title of this talk is actually The Amakua, or How I Learned to Quickly Stop Worrying and Swim with the Sharks. And you might say, well, what's Amakua? Amakua is a Hawaiian word, one of which the meaning is the ancestors return to us as spirits. And that's what they think of the sharks as. They've been swimming with them for centuries. You know, my Amakua was my power returned. That moment to know that I can do whatever it takes with the God within me in charge and get my ego out of the way. So everything I told you is true. I couldn't have made this up. I wouldn't have thought of all these things. And I would tell you that we are always capable. We are always in God. And this is a wonderful message. And here on the 4th, let us be independent from fear and create what we truly want, because this is wonderful. This truth is wonderful. This center is wonderful. I thank you for sharing with me from my heart. Aloha, namaste, blessed be, and so it is. Thank you. Let's take a moment and just be quiet and let ourselves absorb this. Just breathe. And as we breathe, know that this is the life force within us, moving, taking care of us. We can relax and simply breathe. Safe. Secure in the knowledge of the truth. Let us feel our bodies, how vibrantly alive they are this moment, no matter what our physical condition is. Our heart is the heart of God. We have so much more wisdom than we may have ever realized. And as we always have access to breathe, we always have access to God. We can never not be breathing in some stage of the breath, even if it's a pause. So we are always in God. Remember this stillness and this quiet. You can always access it in the middle of whatever. Just remember to breathe. It is a great sacred act. And we can carry this with us. And we do. And so it is.